Hello, and welcome to Big Dating Energy. I am Jeff Gunther, licensed professional counselor. I'm here for you every week. I'm so consistent. That's just like how I am in therapy. I show up every week for my clients. There has been, actually, just a little transparency, there has been twice in my 20 years of being a therapist where I just didn't show up. Something happened. Like, something that happened is just like I forgot. I didn't put it on my calendar. And man, I still walk around with a ton of guilt because of those two sessions. I need therapy. Okay, so today I'm talking to Nick Thompson. You know who Nick Thompson is. I know you do. He has a podcast called Eyes Wide Open. Highly recommend. But you might know him best from season 2 of Love is Blind. Have you ever heard of Love is Blind? It's currently trending. Season 6 just happened, and me and Nick talk about season 6 a little bit and how I feel like everything... Oh God, I promised that I wasn't going to ruin the episode. A couple weeks back, I got this complaint that like I just sort of spoil everything. Okay, so I'm not going to spoil anything. I will say that Nick and I talk in detail about what it's like to be a reality star and how much that fucks with your mental health and how you feel exploited while it's happening. I kind of get really sort of heated towards the end of the episode, so I highly recommend you stay until then. Okay, I think that's it. I think I want to give you like a little bit of a teaser. Like, this is a really good episode. I promise you that. Even if you're not into Love is Blind, you know about reality shows. And me and Nick do a deep dive on what it's like to be a reality star and how things need to change and if we can change and how you, the listener, can support reality stars. I think it's a really good episode. And if you listen to the entire thing, you might never watch a reality show the same way ever again. Me and him recommend that you continue watching all the reality shows, but sort of like with a different perspective, maybe, possibly. Okay, that's it. That's all I'm going to say. Although I will say, the name of this podcast, Big Dating Energy, is also the name of a book that I wrote that you can pre-order now that comes out on July 9th. Can you do that? I think you'd love that book. If you want any dating and relationship advice, it's all in the Big Dating Energy book. Also, if you gave me a little bit of a review, you tossed me 5 stars, that actually helps the podcast a lot. So I'd appreciate if you did that right now. Right now. Take that phone out and just do it right now. Okay. Here's the episode. Hello, Nick. How are you doing today?
Hey, I'm doing just fine. How are you doing?
I'm doing great. Thanks for coming on the podcast.
It's my pleasure. As I said before we recorded, I've followed you for a while now, so this is exciting for me to be here.
Yeah. Do you remember how you found me?
That, you know... If I had to guess, I follow a lot of therapists and mental health accounts. And so, you know how the algorithm works?
Oh yeah.
It just puts people in front of you, that are like audiences. And
yes.
I'm 99% sure you were put in front of me. I would imagine it was probably the fall. No, I started following more accounts like in the summer of 2022. And I bet I found you either probably 2023, if I had to guess.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that tracks.
Like when I was thinking about maybe dating again, because I can't remember the first one that I saw that I was like, yes.
Yeah, I'm always interested in like what, if anyone can remember the first one they saw, what pulls them in. I think that I have a pretty big following. However, people kind of cycle through. I think that like maybe they're like, oh, I'm just starting to date. What's going on here? Or I'm going through a breakup and this is kind of helpful, you know, and they kind of come back when they need to. It's sort of similar to like maybe like my clients that see me as a therapist. They go away and come back and go away and come back sort of thing. Yeah.
I have that relationship with my therapist too. Yeah. It's like sometimes it's 3 times a week.
Exactly. Today I want to talk to you about your experience being on Love is Blind. Obviously, you know, the 6th season just wrapped up, so it might be interesting to talk to you a little bit about that and your thoughts and feelings on that. And then also like your life after Love is Blind and kind of like the initiative that you took up afterwards and how I feel like you're doing some really important work right now.
Thank you.
But let's go ahead and start at the beginning a little bit. So you were on Love is Blind season 2, right?
Yes, that's correct.
Yeah. Did you watch season 1? Did you know what you were getting into?
So that's, when COVID happened, mm-hmm. everybody was watching Love is Blind.
Right.
Except me. I was in the circles of everybody talking about it when I would, pick up my phone and start doom scrolling or something to not participate in that conversation. But everyone I knew for the most part was watching Love is Blind. And I remember people talking about how genuine it was and how it wasn't like The Bachelor and people were sick of The Bachelor and stuff like that. Mm-hmm. And, then it left my mind shortly after people stopped talking about it. And I didn't think about it again until November of 2020, when I got a LinkedIn message from a casting director saying, and God love her. She was wonderful. Nothing bad to say there, I don't think, but, it was like, it was the equivalent of, you're attractive. Are you by chance single? And what I found funny about this at the time is I was a marketing executive. My social media of choice was LinkedIn. I had an Instagram with pictures of my dog on it, and that was it. Mm-hmm. So when I got this, I look back now and I'm like, oh, it's because I'm active on LinkedIn. Like I post, I share thought leadership. I was talking about how to be an empathetic leader and, product marketing stuff, all of my expertise and my passions there. So then I thought it wasn't real, of course, right? Mm-hmm. So I decided to take the call, and then she explained how everything would go. And so I went and I watched season 1, and I had seen, ironically, Nick Viall's season of The Bachelor, which I watched casually with coworkers because we had brackets at work, and I thought that was fun.
Sure.
Right. So I watched it then, and I remember I'm like, oh, this is different. This isn't my interpretation of how reality shows are based on the one that I watched, right? Mm-hmm. And so I was like, oh my gosh, like I'm invested in Lauren and Cameron's story. I'm invested in the Barnett story, Amber and Matt. And I'm kind of invested in Jessica's story. And I found myself like actually invested in these stories. And as someone who kind of knew it wasn't real, thought these people were very genuine and authentic. And so after I watched, I was kind of like, okay, I actually think this addresses a lot of my critiques and concerns about dating, which are, people don't spend enough time getting to know each other. They just cycle through or swipe through the next. And you got three dates with three different people in a week. Like, how do you? And so I felt like this takes away so many of the distractions. I could see how somebody would fall in love that way. And so I kind of went through the process, and I kept trying to talk them out of casting me. And I'm like, hey, like I'm not boring, but the stuff that I care about, like, I don't think it's really going to do well on reality TV. I'm not very dramatic. Mm-hmm. I don't act outside of my character. So you're not going to be able to manipulate me. I know exactly what I want, and I'm not going to end up in something that is forced upon. So I'm trying to talk them out of it, and I never really thought it would be a real thing. And so what ended up happening is I got that phone call like 3 weeks before, walking down Grand Avenue in Chicago. They're like, you're on the show. And I'm like, oh. I was like, so I say I sleepwalked into the pods because I just never thought it would be me. Even the day before, I was kind of like, am I doing this tomorrow? Like, and then I thought to myself, like, I'm under contract to do this. I don't think I have a choice. Like, all of this stuff kind of started going into my head as I went there. But the journey there, like, I never thought they would pick me. I didn't think I would be that kind of person that would go on a reality show. I never thought of, well, I shouldn't say I never thought about it. My friends tried to get me to go on The Bachelor several years ago, but I guess it was meant to be. But yeah, I just kind of sleepwalked into it and never really thought that they would choose me or that I would be good for that. But in retrospect, I think they need people who, before, now who knows? You watch these shows or I hear about them, it's brutal. But I felt like they probably wanted people who had their shit together, for lack of a better word. I hope I can swear.
And you can.
And wanted people like that so that they could like have success stories. That was my interpretation. I don't know if I how much of that's all true, but that's kind of my thought.
That's interesting. Were they like upselling you at all? Like you'll come here and you'll find love. And were they like making you pretty excited?
Yeah, they hard sell this thing, but it's it actually, because I'm in software, right? So I know like how sales works. I support sales teams, and it is like, I feel like they're moving you through this like sales process when I look at it in retrospect, where it's like, this is a psychological based love experiment. We're looking for people that are real, not people trying to be influencers. And they just tell you like everything you would, I feel like they kind of know you enough from the interview process and the psych evaluation that they can kind of figure out what levers to pull. And so I'm like, oh, it's psychology based. Mm-hmm. What could possibly go wrong? you know? So this is my mindset. And, oh, you know, we'll make sure everyone on the other side's there for the right reasons. And what are you looking for? What's worked in your past relationships? What do you need in your next relationships? And they just sell you the whole way. It's you hang out and do virtual happy hours with your producers beforehand.
Really? I'm like jumping ahead, way ahead. So we're going to come, I'm going to jump ahead, then we're going to come back. But I watched, I think it was a few days ago, I don't know if you saw it, the season 6 reunion, right? Did you see that the very last episode?
I can't watch the show anymore, but I know what happened because I heard firsthand from cast members.
One of the things that like really caught me was like, there was, I think it was her name, Sarah Ann, who's like with Jeremy now, and she made a post at some point after the show on Instagram or something being like, are you entertained? Where she was kind of like playing into her, right?
I saw that.
It seemed like Love is Blind and Netflix and the rest of like the folks that were on that show were just like, fuck you for saying this. This is real life. I cannot believe that you're going to like pretend or like make us think that like this is like this is just entertainment to you, and like these are like real relationships to us. And the two hosts, whatever they, whoever they're, I can't remember their
Nick and Vanessa.
Nick and Vanessa were also like coming down on Sarah Ann as well. And I was like, whoa, dude! And they also had these like, it felt the season 6 reunion felt very dystopian to me for some reason, because there was also like these. The couples that were quote unquote successful that were there were like Love is Blind. Netflix was like, see these successful, happy couples. Yep. This is what the show really does. This psychological experience is different. It's not like the other reality shows like Bachelor or whatever the fuck. Right. So it's interesting that you're telling me this story where like they start like implanting this very early on in all of you when you're starting to become, you know, signing the contract.
It is. And what's interesting is I feel like after last season and all of the fact that it was shorter, they had less couples. They had two couples they had to cut out completely. They got sued twice. All of these things. And the food spread that was on set. It's so dystopian. I call it, it's propaganda. And I'm not saying, and I fell in love on the show, and people will give me shit when I say the experiment itself can work, and then will you divorce? Well, people can fall in love on the show, and you're in a completely manufactured environment, and that doesn't mean that you're compatible in the real world. And so these are like two completely separate things that people need to consider. But what I think is happening there is the show is losing control of their narrative, and their narrative is that storyline. And what happens when anyone loses control of the narrative? They hit you with more of the narrative to try and get you back on track, right? And so I think when there's food everywhere and there's food montages and you focus on highlighting these couples and cutting down someone for saying it's entertainment, you know, I also have a Move On petition right now that's got over 30,000 signatures to add a disclaimer before shows, reminding people that these are for entertainment purposes only,
right?
And people can be edited any way that they want, misrepresented. And by the way, that petition, I went through my contract in the part where they say what they can do to you with an edit, and I just used their words and said, let's open the door here and show what you're really offering and capable of doing, and just remind people, because it is for entertainment. People are not being accurately represented. And then there's a backlash to that. And that backlash that comes in isn't even just from the internet. Like, the Netflix Love is Blind accounts on Instagram promote it, and they don't even tag the people that they're promoting that said or did something they didn't say or do. And so it's just this, like, it's this well-oiled machine.
Right.
All designed to, like, push the narratives that they want. And they have commentators and, quote, influencers that are on the payroll of these production companies that are out there pushing the narratives that they want. It is, I sound like Alex Jones or something, but it is systemically crazy the amount of effort that goes into trying to push these narratives as reality. And then cast members are contracted with NDAs to not respond. So to say this is entertainment, people, my guess is there was a big misrepresentation there somewhere, or something edited out of order, which has happened.
Yeah. There was also in that, like, season six reunion, the whole time there was a huge, there's like two really big tables filled with, like, food that kept on, like, that were sort of like you kept on seeing every now and then. And then at the end of the show, Nick and Vanessa were like, okay, now let's feast. And they all went to, like, the beautiful, like, food that was, it felt like Hunger Games or something. Like,
that's how I describe it. I say this is the Hunger Games or the Gladiator Games. And the Gladiator Games had people turning on each other. I'd want this guy to lose to the tiger, right? Like, it's crazy. So, and it is, it's like North Korea level propaganda when it's that obvious.
Right. That is so bizarre. Okay. All right, so weird. Hold on. So let's go back a little bit to your experience. How did it feel just being in the pods in the first place? I think that, like, a lot of us are watch the show and you're like, oh, okay, I get the psychological experience, the experiment. Like, that's really interesting. I want to see what happens here. But then it seems like all of the people in the pod start, like, falling in love really quickly. What was that experience like for you? And do you think that, like, the show, I mean, I would imagine the show encourages this. I talked to Katie Thurston, who's been on The Bachelor.
I know Katie. Yeah.
Yeah, a couple
times. Not personally. I follow her.
Yeah. Katie's great. And she was on the second episode of this podcast. And one of the things that she said about the producers that were, like, talking to her the whole time were like, hey, Katie, trust the process. Trust the process. Like, open up
to us.
Right. Is that the same thing that they say to you all? It feels like a very.
Oh, my gosh. Now you're creeping me out, because I do feel like. These are different networks, different production companies, but that's crazy. So my experience in the pods was different than a lot of the other people's experience in the pods. When you first get there on the first day that you're filming in the pods, you do 15 men, 15 women. You do basically 7-minute speed dates with everyone.
Oh, wow.
I was going through probably 11 or 12, and I was kind of like rolling my eyes. Not rolling my eyes at the women, like, they were all fine, but, like, rolling my eyes at, like, I can't believe I thought that this was, like, legit. Like, I gave myself that little piece of, well, maybe. And I went in with good intentions. I was fully fine going in and getting married. I was also fully fine going in and leaving after this first day, because I didn't connect with anyone. So that was my mindset. And so I was just kind of like, oh, you know, of course this wouldn't, you know, this wouldn't work out or whatever. And that's fine. And then I got in a pod across from Danielle, and it just, like, there was instant chemistry, instant clicking. We started kind of, you know, sensing each other later as we moved through the process that we were going to be meeting with each other. Because you don't know, you go in blind to the pod, you don't know who you're meeting with. You just know you have. Yeah.
Wow. So even if you wanted to spend more time with somebody, you don't get to choose to do that. The producers choose that for you.
Yes. Yeah. For the most part. So after you do that first day, you rank everybody, and then the producers get the ranking order, and they go through and they mix it up or whatever, match it. I don't know what happens behind there. I could only speculate. But then you kind of find out the next day. I think I think the next day. And then as the days go on, your list gets smaller and smaller if you're matching up with someone. Mm-hmm. And then you start spending more time with them. And there's also nighttime dating, which is not required but encouraged. And that's when you get to spend more time with the same people you did during the day. So by the end, like Danielle and I were probably talking 6 hours a day, just talking in the pods, split up in two different times, you know, hour and a half or a couple hours here, a couple hours there. But it gets pretty extensive. Now, what was different for me and her was we connected pretty quickly. And they do tell you every day, every morning, the creator would come in and say, trust the process and, you know, blah, blah, blah. Like, don't lock anyone down. There could be one thing you find out that changes everything. So keep your guards open. Trust the process. It's 10 days. Trust the process, right? Mm-hmm. And so Danielle and I connected really quickly. And then it was probably day four, maybe five, but I think it was probably four. You know, she had told me that it was me or she wanted to go home. And I had been feeling the same way, but I was trusting the process and talking to someone else closely too. And when she said that, I was like, I feel the same way. I told that other person the next time I saw them. And then I thought all of those morning lectures we were getting about trusting the process were geared towards me. So, because we were like, we're done with the process. It's just each other. But, you know, to the point, not everyone had that experience. And, you know, there were conversations in the guys' lounge where the guys would be like, oh, we got Nick's going to Mexico. We gotta lock this down. Like, I gotta fix. And I think that would the kind of uncertainty that created is what was getting us those morning lectures. But, not everyone else knew right away there. And we maybe knew on day three, and they made it look like I proposed on day three, but we all proposed on the same day. We just knew earlier that we wanted to stick it out together, where other people were figuring that out, like the day before, the day of, like, am I going to propose? Am I not going to propose? Are they going to say yes? Are they not going to say yes? So there was a lot of that for a lot of other people, but we lucked out figuring it out pretty early, and then consequently got to work on our relationship and our communication and, you know, learning about each other where the others were trying to get to where we got to on that fourth day.
Mm-hmm. I got it. When you were like proposing in the pod, how did that feel? Did it feel like funky that you're like in this weird space talking to somebody through a wall? Or did it just feel like very sweet and romantic and you're in love and who cares? Like, what was your experience?
At first, like that, even the first couple days, it's weird. It's you're not even talking. You're talking through a wall, yes. And the headshots they show of all the pot, like those are real. Like I have to say, the set is freaking crazy. It is so cool. It is way bigger than you think it is, and it is like you think about like reality TV. And this, we're filming at people's houses and stuff. And then this set, it's extravagant. They do a wonderful job building a really cool set. The pods are weird because you're talking through a wall. You know the person's over there, but you actually have a little speaker in there that you're hearing them from. So it's almost like talking on a phone.
Yeah.
You know? And and so once I kind of got past that first couple days and it was just going to be me and Danielle, it felt natural. It didn't, there was nothing weird. It was weird if I had to force conversations with other people I didn't want to talk to. And I'm an introvert. So like pointless conversation to me is pointless and I don't want to do it. So there was one time, me and, I think it was Natalie, we were both just like, yeah, we're tired. She was locked in on Shane. I was locked in on Danielle. It was towards the end. And we were just like, do you want to just take a nap? So we just kind of like, I went on a long bathroom break and then came back and we just kind of didn't waste each other's time there.
That's great.
Yeah.
Was there, when you mentioned the guys, the men's lounge there, did it feel like you were all like competing with each other? Did it feel supportive and like a really sweet community? What was the vibe?
It was a little bit of both. There were, I remember there was one point where someone came out glowing about their date with Danielle. And this was before we were, you know, exclusive, let's just say, or going steady, as our grandparents would say.
Sure.
And I just remember, like, I was feeling different about her. And in my, I kept a journal at my hotel room, which we went to for, to sleep at night for a few hours. I went there and I kept a journal there and I wrote down and I just kept writing in my journal. I'm like, God, there's something about her. I can't put my finger on it. There's something about her. Mm-hmm. And, when I heard this other person coming out and being like, I just had the best date with Danielle. And oh my God, it was this, it was this, it was this. I just remember for the first time there, I was like, oh, I see. This is all a game. Or that was my feeling. I felt punched in the stomach. And then I remember one of the promises I made with myself when I was there. And of course, this is still early. We're like day two or three. One of the promises I made with myself was I'm not getting in a love triangle in front of the whole world where I have to fight for someone, because that's not going to be someone who's 100% sure. Just because of the nature of the beast, right? Sure. The nature of the experiment, the nature of the show. If, and we kind of saw some of that play out with, I don't, it's been a few years now, but I lived it, so I remember the details. We saw some of that play out on the show with Jarrett and Ayana and Mallory, where Jarrett had, you know, kind of proposed to Mallory to find out that she actually was into Sal. And then he went and proposed to Ayana and, you know, to each their own there, like, that's not what I want. That's not the situation I wanted to be in. So I started thinking to myself there, I'm like, oh my God, like, do I just call this now? Like, am I, cause I, you know, we have dates, but it wasn't like that, you know, and turned out to not be a thing, obviously. But, you know, I remember feeling that, and that was the first time I felt a little competitive. There were some love triangles for sure that made it to screen that were, I would say, manufactured for the screen. And then there were some real ones that didn't get airtime at all.
Oh, interesting. Yeah. I always wonder why some get airtime and others don't get airtime. I feel like it's, that's a complicated process that will maybe never really get to the answers for. Yeah.
On my season, and I know there's been other ones too, but on our season, it was weird because we had six, seven, eight couples get engaged. And when it happened, Danielle and I were both like, we're so freaking boring. Like, we're not going to Mexico. We're going home. There's no, there was no drama, right? At the time. Right. So we then, like, when we got the call, and not together, because you can't be together at all until you see each other, then you're separated for a few days, and then you show up in Mexico and you see each other again for the first time since then.
Okay.
Bizarre.
Yeah. And, well, do you know what the reason is for keeping you separated?
They, I have the reason they tell us and my speculation, but,
what do you think that is?
Yeah. So the reason they tell us it, well, we had weird COVID protocols too for filming. Sure.
Right,
yeah. So they said there was some like, there were like protocols where like, oh, you traveled, now you got to quarantine. That's what I was for this amount of days to make sure that you test negative and stuff like that. So it was like 4 days, I think it was, between the reveal where we saw each other for 25 minutes and then seeing each other again. Mm-hmm. There's a couple reasons that they tell you. One, they want to capture everything on camera, right? Mm-hmm. Two, I think there's a, you know, a raising the alarm on your nervous system of what happened.
Right.
I remember I was sitting in my hotel room waiting or after the reveal. And I was like, I'm in love. She was beautiful. Everything is great. Like I found my person, no drama, like all this stuff. And then as I'm sitting there isolated in my hotel room and Kyle, Sal and I all roomed near each other. So we'd try to sneak out in the hall and have some convos. And Kyle was like, are you worried at all that she wasn't physically attracted to you? And I was like, huh. And it was like inception. Cause then I spent the next 3 days being like, was she attracted to me? She did act weird when I proposed. And so then I'm like reliving the whole reveal in my head, trying to figure out. And I think that's part of it. Too. And when we got to Mexico, it was probably 4 days since we had seen or talked to each other. I think they want that organic interaction from the scenario that they've created. Mm-hmm. And on top of that, and you know, Danielle has anxiety, and it can get pretty bad sometimes. And they came to us and told us, we switched your producer. It's going to be someone we're pulling from another show to come here and produce you guys as a couple. And what I had heard from the other producers was that everyone was fighting over who was going to get to produce us, because we were going to be, you know, the happy success story. And so they brought this other person in, and then I don't know if much other than that, but when he came in from another show, it kind of created anxiety for her. Like, she thought that I was breaking up with her, and that's why they brought someone in who wouldn't be attached to the situation. And and I thought to myself, I'm like, why would they bring someone off of another show who's working on another show right now, pull him off that show to bring him here? And I was like, so something's fishy, something's up. And so we both kind of saw each other for the first time again, thinking something was off after leaving just completely in love. So it's just it's a weird, like, game almost.
Yeah. I mean, they're sort of, it sounds like they're deliberately, but whether they're deliberately or not doing this. So they're creating these sort of like anxious attachment styles where you start to like question everything, and spending so much time apart after seeing each other for 25 minutes, now you're yearning for each other and you're like love and, you know, the chemistry or the sparks or whatever it is, it's all getting like really amplified, right?
Yeah,
which is makes for like great reality TV, I guess, when like emotions are running really high. And now you're like wondering what the fuck is going on with this new producer. So what a weird, it's funny, you use the word like they want to sort of like see how everything organically unfolds in this incredibly inorganic process, right?
Right. It's a manufactured, that's what I tell people. It's a completely manufactured environment. It's unnatural. Even the guys, let me tell this story real quick. It's we're doing a nonlinear storytelling here, but
it's okay.
When I went to the airport to go to the show, you get picked up at, there's someone with signs or whatever, and then you're standing there with all of the guys, because it was all from Chicago, so we all flew to LA for the pod. All of the guys except Shane were on this flight. Shane got in a car accident on the way to the airport and missed his flight with his Uber. So it was like, it's a comedy of errors almost, but we're sitting there and we're like not allowed to talk to each other. And then they split us up into vans of like three, four people, however many they could fit, to take us to the hotel. And we're not allowed to talk to each other because they want all of us meeting to be organic.
Oh, God.
Yeah. So they separate you in the hotels, right? Like if like Sal, Kyle and I, we were always scared of getting caught sneaking out to talk in the hallway. It's like, it's such a weird like system, but you just can't talk off a camera.
But you're all going through it together. So maybe like, you're not going to question it in the moment as much. Looking back on it and what, you know, like then you can be like, what the fuck happened there? But I guess like, maybe you're just like, this is what reality shows are like, and I'm going to go with the flow.
That's
here,
exactly,
I guess.
Right. That's exactly right.
How much did you get paid? Can we talk about that?
Yeah. It's actually one of my biggest points of contention that has really opened my eyes to it is you get paid $1,000 stipend per week when you're filming. That's it. And by the way, there are no residuals at all. So I'm watching season six get, you know, the most watched season ever of the show. And I'm looking at that and I'm like, well, they wouldn't have a sixth season if it wasn't for season one and season two and season three and season four and season five. And there's nothing there, and they're making so much money. So you get that $1,000 a week. And, you know, I remember looking at it at the time because I had, you know, my marketing career in tech. I'm owned my house. I was doing well, worked hard, doing well. And I kind of looked at this as, well, this is like a little extra money in my savings account, right? Seven grand if I go all the way, $1,000 if I go the first week. Okay. I'm getting my vacation pay at work. You know, it was so like I looked at it in a very different way than I look at it now. And, you know, this is just how reality TV works. And then you get there and you're being recorded and filming for 16, 18, 20 hours a day. And you don't have your phone, you don't have your wallet, you don't have your passport, you don't have your credit cards, you don't have any money. I always tell people, if you're going on a show, put some money in your sock, cash, because you don't realize, you take for granted how easy we have access to like get food, water, or buy something that you need, right?
Uh-huh.
So it's very, that's my tip of the day, but it is, it's just very, it's very surreal, and just 20 hours and $1,000, like it comes out to be like $7.14 an hour, which is below federal minimum wage.
Right.
And they're making millions, if not billions.
Yeah.
And they own your likeness. Like they own your likeness. Mm-hmm. They own like in the contract, I read it, even though people on the internet think I'd never read the contract. I think that's hilarious. But I read it because I had to have a pieces of it amended because of my job. My job needs some public speaking. And you can't do any public speaking, any interviews for, I forget the exact time, but for at least a year. You can't do anything without their permission. And I would have to do interviews and podcasts for my job. Mm-hmm. And so I had to have that piece amended in the contract for me. But otherwise, like they own you. They wow. own you. Where you go, what you do. Once the show comes out too, you can't do any media without them approving it for a year. And then there's something about for 5 years, you can't do another show without their permission. You can't use... you can't use the Love is Blind brand or name. So like Danielle, for example, she did a Weight Watchers deal, which was how she lost a lot of her weight healthily the second time. Mm-hmm. And, she had to work really, really hard with them to be able mm-hmm. to do that and reshoot content. Cause she mentioned Love is Blind and couldn't do any press work for them for the first certain, it was a very like crazy control over her likeness and utilization of, you know, the quote 15 minutes of fame you get going right. on these shows. They get to determine how you use it and how you don't.
Interesting. Yeah. Okay. Mixels. I just like, I reached out for season 6. I reached out to Chelsea and Lauren. I sent them like a DM on Instagram. I was like, hey, do you want to be on the podcast? Chelsea was like 1000%. I can't wait. And Lauren was like, oh my God, so much fun. And then I like emailed their managers or whatever, nothing. if they want to be on the podcast, like it seemed like they're excited, but it doesn't seem like they're allowed to be on my podcast. Cause now this
that
makes sense.
That could be. Cause even when we had like a publicist, we would go to them, they would go to Netflix and Kinetic, which is the production company, and mm-hmm. they would fight sometimes. Like there was a couple awkward phone calls. Cause our PR folks were trying to maximize, you know, the 15 minutes to get us monetize it, right? And right. that was difficult due to the contract and the women. Mm-hmm. And I'm super into news and politics, right? Like mm-hmm. I love talking about the news, the politics. Mm-hmm. And one of my favorite independent media shows reached out to me to ask me if I wanted to come on the show. Oh, sure. And I was like, I had to ask, and I was like, listen, like this is the one thing I want to do. And my publicist was like, I don't think that's going to be good. You want to talk about mental health, keep it high level. Don't get too serious about it. Mm-hmm. If you want to talk about news and politics, I wouldn't do it at all because it's too dividing. And then the other thing I said I cared about was like I DIY a lot of my own stuff, like my soaps, my condiments. And they're like, that's okay. We can do some of that, but don't do too much because you'll alienate big brands. I'm like, I can't be myself. So I was going to do this other show, whether they said yes or not, the new show. So I did it, but they did give me permission. But that's how much control they have.
Hmm. Yeah, that's frightening. Yeah. And they get you when you're so vulnerable, you know, like just signing the contract, probably hoping that you're not really reading through it and that you're not going to show it to a lawyer or something. And
well, they don't give you enough time usually to do that.
Right.
I think I might have had a week, but I know others had like a day.
Yeah. That's ridiculous. Yeah. Going back to your relationship with Danielle, though, like we know that you got together, you got married, and then eventually split up. Do you think that, like, if you just would have met her, like, actually organically in real life, that you would have had a better shot? Or did this whole process make the relationship even harder to be long term?
Oh man, I wish I could sit down and put my feet up and talk through this. You know, one of the funny things about us meeting in that situation is that the world probably was trying to get us to meet organically before that. And I have two stories to tell you why.
Oh,
one, back in 2012, I was just kind of getting my career under me. I graduated college in 2010. I was on a little bit of a longer plan because I had to work full time to put myself through school. So I was just getting my career under my feet. And I actually interviewed at a company her dad owned. So it wasn't a big company. It was probably a 30, 40 person company. And I went through the interview process at her dad's company. I ended up not getting that job, but there was a chance she was interning because that was around the time she was interning and may or may not have seen each other, run into each other if I started working there or something. The second part, it's so weird. And Chicago and the suburbs is not a small space.
Right, huge.
Right, right. And then the second thing, which is even crazier. So she, one of her best friends from college, was my downstairs neighbor in a three flat for 2 years. She was there almost every weekend. Again, a three flat, right? So it's not like it's a big building.
Right.
And was there all the time, and we never ran into each other. Huh. In fact, there was one day where they were out with her friends at a party. Her college friend came home with their friend that was in town, too overpoured, we'll say. I want to say the too drunk, overpoured. And they had locked themselves out of their apartment. So I invited them up, and then he went back to get keys from his roommate, and I had their friend literally passed out in my bed. And it was, and it was like, how did that not, you know, turn into us meeting in real life somehow.
Right.
So we have had these like few stories. And then not to mention, there's another, we lived close enough at a time where it was probably like a half a mile. We would be at the same Targets. We would be at the same grocery stores. We would be at the same neighborhood and just never run into each other. So it's very weird that we missed each other in real life after being so close that we had to go out to LA on a reality TV show to meet. Like I used to joke about, like, the world was like, okay, fine. Since you're not taking the cues, we're going to just make this happen.
Right.
So,
wow, that is bizarre.
It's so bizarre. But what I think, to get back to your main question, if we would have met in real life, it's hard to speculate, right? But what I will say that happened to us, when we were in the pods, we were really good at communicating. She taught me how to make balloon animals just through the wall, like talking me through it. And I did. I know how to make balloon animals now.
Yeah.
So like, we had good communication. We were vulnerable. We trusted each other. We listened to each other. Then when we got to Mexico and we had the producer change, our whole relationship dynamic changed. And our producers in the pods didn't get very involved in our relationship. They were there if you wanted to talk. At one point I went to my producer and I said, am I doing this right? You're like never talking to me. And she's like, no, you are doing it right. That's why I don't have to talk to you. Right. And then they later, you know, one of the producers later said, we saw you two connect very organically and we just wanted to like go hands off and let you guys figure it out. So when we got a new producer that came in and he didn't know the story, he didn't follow us in the pods and he was producing, which is what they're doing, our storyline. Right. And it just completely changed from any of the organic things that we had initially connected on.
But what is that? So can you talk a little bit more about like what producing actually is? Like what kind of impact and what kind of things are they saying to you in order to affect the relationship?
Yeah. So producers are, you know, they're supposed to be your confidant. They're the closest thing you have to a therapist as you're making these life altering decisions.
Are there any therapists on set?
So they claim they have two, never saw them once. And when Danielle had a panic attack in Mexico, there was a whole lot of producers and no therapists. So
interesting. Okay.
It's interesting. It's a claim. I know other shows do, but they're also funded by production. So
right.
You know, they're contracted to be able to share information that is right or wrong. So there's there's like some really blurry lines there. And I know. And actually, Dr. Isabel Morley, who's the psychologist and therapist on the UCAN Foundation Board of Directors, actually petitioned the APA to put ethical guidelines for reality TV in their code of ethics, which would be really cool. So we get there in Mexico and everything starts changing. And we had one day where we were all, production was shut down for COVID. We were all left to our own devices in our room because you don't have a room key, so you can't leave. And she and I got super close that day, like even closer. And then the next day, the whole dynamic changed when she had a stomach issue, which was a COVID symptom, and she couldn't go to the couple's reveal party because they needed to quarantine her. And they told me, like, you really should go and represent you guys as a couple and you don't have to stay long and all of this stuff. And I didn't want to go. I didn't care. Like, I just wanted to be with her. And in retrospect, that was the changing point of our whole experience because they isolated her by herself while everyone else was at this party. And before I even agreed to go, I requested that there was a specific producer that would be outside of our door for her to talk to if she was lonely or anxious or whatever, FOMO even. Like, how would you not have FOMO in this situation? Right. And they didn't even do that. And so when she had her panic attack and I was at this party with no idea this was going on, and I get back there, and this is where things went way off the rails. I get back there, and they told me, go in there. Danielle's sitting on the end of the bed. We're set up to film from outside. Go in there and sit close to her because she's not mic'd, and go in there and have a conversation about the party. And so I'm, figure she's up to snuff. I'm up to snuff. I go in there and the dynamics of the conversation are just off. Like, this is not the Danielle that I know. We were not communicating. Something was else was going on. And she said, I had the panic attack and you're sitting here, basically not verbatim, but you're sitting here talking about these couples. I just had a panic attack here. And I'm like, I didn't know you had a panic attack here. Like, so that was the big explosion, and we weren't fighting with each other at that point. I was fighting with the producers. I took my mic off. I threw it in the pool. I said, we're done and we're leaving. That was not okay. And that moment where they withheld that information from me, forced her to film, was a real difference in, and I think they saw, and this is me speculating, I think I have to say that because they're trying to get me on a defamation lawsuit, so I got to be careful with what I say there. Seriously. And so my thought there was they saw how they could create conflict with us.
Right.
Is that take her uncertainty and anxiety and kind of weaponize it and put us in these intense situations we're already in, but put us in these conversations. And then what they do is when you're having private conversations or you're doing your, they're called on the fly interviews or OTFs, which is where you cut away and the person's like talking about the situation that just unfolded in real, you know, real life. I use air quotes. And then, they basically like use that time to extract information from you about what has happened maybe off camera. And this is beyond Mexico's the whole time. And then it seemed like they crafted storylines that they wanted to happen and tried to like rig us into them because we didn't have any arguments at all until that panic attack. And when she was panicking and freaking out about how crazy this all was and, you know, what was her life going to be like? Was she going to be able to marry me? Like, is this real? Which is normal feelings to have, let alone when you're sitting in a hotel room that you're locked in by yourself while everybody else is out at a party. And it just kind of like changed the dynamic of how we were produced as a couple. And so when they take these, you know, storylines, and one example is they wanted us to talk about my student loan debt. She didn't have any, I do have it. And she's like, I don't care. I'm lucky I don't have it. And all my friends have it.
Right.
And I'm like, yeah, I don't care. And she's like, yeah. And he owns a condo and I rent. Like, it's, you know, six of one, half a dozen of the other. Like I could have paid off my student loan and still been renting. It's, you know, and so they would try to manufacture those kinds of stories, and knowing how to like get your triggers and get you frustrated. And that's what they produce. Mm-hmm. So I found out after the fact that they would always say things to Danielle, like, do you think you're worthy of love? Do you think Nick's, do you think, seriously, and I didn't know this was going on, or do you think Nick will stay with you if you gain weight again?
What the fuck?
Do you, it's bad. And here's the real humdinger that's disgusting. They told her that I said, I don't know if I can live with her and her anxiety.
Wow. That's fucked up.
I wouldn't say. And if I did think that, I still wouldn't say it, because that's not something you need to say to someone to hurt them.
No.
And so that's what they're doing. And that's how they're getting people, you know, so hyped up, that with like, you know, limited sleep, this pressure cooker environment, all of that stuff. And so they produce these scenes and they know how they want them to go. You know, they determine and they kind of keep you in flux about what the scene's going to be and where you're going to be filming and all this crazy stuff, where it's like, sometimes you really don't even know where you're filming until 30 minutes before you're supposed to be there. So it's just this chaotic environment. And, you know, one other thing they tried to produce, which they did a little bit, but they had this whole thing they kept trying to push, that I'm too mature and she's too immature, and that it was never going to work. And if you remember, like, you know, the table breaking thing was totally misdirection. But we had this whole thing where they were going to, they were meeting friends. And so they had me meet her friends. Everybody got along. Scene didn't even make it, because they thought it was going to be them chaotic and drunk and me thinking they were children. And they gave them tons of shots before I got there, all sorts of stuff. And then a couple days later, we did brunch with my friends, and you, the whole narrative and the questions they throw at you and the things they tell you to talk about was around like maturity. And it's just, they wanted my friends to think she was immature, to influence me that she was immature. And then they wanted her friends to be immature so that I could experience the immaturity. And none of those scenes made it in there, because everybody got along. And we actually took trips together. Like, everybody got along great. And there was no drama, despite them trying to manufacture it. And so this is what the producers are doing. They're getting you, when you're vulnerable and you're not sure what to do, they have control levers over you to convince you to do things. I've heard horror stories from people on my season, other seasons, of what producers have said and done to, and it's not just this show. This is my experience. So it's easier for me to talk about, but that's the level of what's going on these shows. And to have, you know, when I heard Danielle tell, just questioning if she's worthy of love or my love or whatever, like, in this environment, like in this condensed, compressed environment, knowing all of the work that she had done on herself to get herself in a good place, and then to see her, you know, deteriorate's a strong word, but like watching it and experiencing it in real time and not even knowing the stuff that was being said to her behind the scenes, it's just, it's incredibly sad. And so it makes me wonder, like, would things have been different if we didn't have that producer, or if we didn't go through this pressure cooker environment? And we were questioning, you know, she actually had said to me a few days before the wedding that she didn't think she could be the person that she could have been at the beginning when she decided to do this. And she didn't think we should get married because she didn't think she could be a good wife. And when I think about that call, and that conversation was a long one, that was like a couple hour conversation. I think about that and I'm like, man, it only took 7 weeks, and they took two people that were head over heels in love with each other and bonding over the things you should be bonding over, you know, family and how we want to live our lives and what we do for fun and compatibility stuff. And then to see like that deterioration, and then to just drop us back into reality without any support, it was, it definitely had an impact. Whether or not we would still be together if we met in real life? I can't answer that, but I think we would have had a fighting chance if we had a fighting chance.
Right. Oh my fucking God.
It's really sad.
It's sad. And it sort of like, whether you want it to or not, it seems like it changes you permanently. Like, and changes.
I'll never be the same.
Yeah. And changes like the potential success that you could have had with Danielle. You want to maybe be able to like wipe that shit out of your brain, but it's like impacted you in a really powerful way. So it's very fun. And it makes me, the viewer, while I'm like watching these seasons, laughing or having opinions or rolling my eyes or, you know, having like very specific feelings and thoughts about each person on the show. It makes me feel like a fucking asshole, right? Like I allow Netflix and the producers to make me feel a certain way by using you all as like manipulating all the people that are like bearing their souls or going on the show and trying to be hopeful or optimistic or whatever it is. Whether you go on Love is Blind or any reality show with like, they always fucking talk about this bullshit. Like, what do you have like good intentions or not? Like, are you just trying to become an influencer or are you really there for love? Like, fuck off. Who cares? They're real people and they're getting manipulated and fucked with. And so it's like the right reason. Why don't we like turn that on to these reality shows? Like, they're not ethically right and they're like morally corrupt. And this is like what's fucked up about it. I know we're starting to run out of time, but I know that like coming out of this experience, you started to do really important work trying to like shine a light on everything. Yeah. Can you talk more about that?
Yeah. I do want to comment. So I agree with you on the intention thing, right? Because I had this moment where I was at rock bottom and I'm like, I did this with the best intentions. It's snowing in Chicago right now. I just caught my eye. What? Sorry.
It's ridiculous. Come on, Chicago. Get your shit together.
Man. But now I'm like, what is the right intention? Like, if somebody goes on this show to find love, that's not the point of the show. The show is to produce drama to make money. So if someone's going to go on there and give them drama, is that the right reasons? I think you could, and I think you can make the argument like, what if a show isn't doing their part? You can't blame the viewers. So I'm with you on that. And I'm glad that you see that. I don't think you should feel bad. I think people should enjoy it for entertainment purposes only. And remember that these are still real people. That's the most important thing, which is why I co-founded the UCAN Foundation, which is Unscripted Cast Advocacy Network. Our three pillars are: we support cast members from any reality show with mental health services. We can connect them with therapists that have been vetted by our team. And we also offer legal support. And then the third pillar is advocating and working towards change in the industry to make sure that people are treated properly, have rights, and are listed as employees instead of contractors. So you can get some basic labor regulation, because the industry has gone completely unregulated and it's showing itself now. But I think the reason I started this was, there's a lot, but the main reason was when I was at my absolute worst, where I went through a very public divorce, I was accused due to a Reddit post of cheating that went viral, which I mentioned to you a little earlier, that also led to my friend getting attacked on social media that I was accused of cheating with. And then I had lost my job shortly after for being smeared and slandered in the media and inflammatory headlines. That wasn't the only reason, I'm clear on that, but that was a contributor as to why me and not somebody else. And I just lost everything that I had worked so hard for. And I was at rock bottom at the end of 2022. And then I was like, I'm done. I don't want to be, these aren't my people. This isn't my world. I'm going back to my reality. I'm going to get back with my friends, my family, and be around, put together a life that worked for me before any of this shit ruined my life. Right. And so I just was done. I didn't care about growing my following. I'm just going to do my podcast. People can find me from that. I don't want to have a social media calendar. I just want to post when I want to post and say what I want to say. And I started to kind of like try and rebuild my life and just do it little pieces at a time and get myself in a place where I could function and feel okay again. And Then I got a DM from a reporter at Business Insider who's like, I'm doing an expose on Love is Blind behind the scenes treatment of cast members, and I want to interview you. And I sat for a little bit and thought about it. And I was like, this is me going back into that world. Jeremy, the co-founder of UCAN, who was also on my season, didn't get much screen time, went home quick, has a lawsuit against Kinetic for violating labor in California. Mm-hmm. And he had told me about this idea a year earlier. And I was like, dude, good luck, like taking on big reality TV. Like you're never going to do anything. And so he'd been pressuring me. He's like, hey, he's like, you going to do this interview? Like we could launch the foundation. Are you in? Are you in? And what I thought, and this is what pushed me over the edge, is I'm like, I've never felt so alone in my life. And nobody treats it like it's real except me. Like my family doesn't even talk about it anymore. It was like so weird. Mm-hmm. And my friends, how you doing? I'm okay. I'm actually like really sad and actually loved this person and thought I was going to spend my life with them. But, you know, yeah, I'm good. And I thought to myself, I'm like, thank God I can handle this. Thank God I don't care what people think about me, because someone else would hurt themselves. Someone else, life would be completely ruined forever. And then I thought about what they did to Danielle. And then I thought about what they did to our relationship that may or may not have worked, but we would have had a fighting chance if there was some support. And instead of us fighting about a panic attack I didn't know she had, maybe we could have learned from a therapist on set some coping skills and communication skills in that situation. And I just started thinking about all these things and I got angry. And I'm not someone who really gets angry like that about that stuff, about things that have happened to me. And I found myself getting angry and I'm like, when I get angry, I have to do something. And I'm like, kind of fuck. If someone needs to say something and no one else will say it, I hold myself to say it. This is how I ended up as group leader in a lot of projects in school. Because if no one else will step up, I'll do it. And I thought about what they did to her. I thought about what they did to us. And I said, I can't let this happen to people. And I was like, okay, I'm in, but we have to shift some focus, some messaging. Here's what it's got to be. And, you know, we came to agreement on that. And we launched the UCAN Foundation about a year ago now. And we have been wildly successful from a perspective of helping cast members. We've talked to well over 100 cast members from various shows. We've connected them up with legal representation. Mm-hmm. We've connected them up with mental health services. We've done some amazing things in the labor movement piece of this. You know, we are allied with the Teamsters and SAG-AFTRA and, you know, really pushing towards taking the steps to form a union for reality cast members and the advocacy piece. That's where I'm, you know, super passionate about the advocacy and getting people mental health support. So we're doing all of these things for cast members that some of you know and some of you may not know because their experience didn't make it on TV, but they went through all of it. And so it's for every, you know, famous reality star that you still follow from whatever, there's probably 100 behind them that have all of the trauma and none of the benefits. Mm-hmm. So we're going to use this foundation to advocate for change and help people. And I was surprised to know how, I mean, I swear to God, people on the internet would boo Santa Claus. Like helping people triggers a lot of people, but, but that's the work I'm doing now. And I'm trying, I'm putting everything in that I have in me into this cause because I genuinely believe that we can do better. And I believe viewers deserve better and cast members certainly deserve better.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I mean, it feels like it's about time that you all are creating this organization and trying to create change, because this has been going on reality TV show. Like that's just been going on for 30 years or more or something. Like
it actually goes back to the 80s.
To the 80s?
Yeah. Actually, I talked to someone who's writing a book about a month ago, and she's actually traced it back to like the 60s. Because she's writing a book about reality TV and its origins and everything. But it's like,
I remember, I was first a Real World fan back in the early 90s, I guess. Oh, yeah. It was. But yeah. That's fucking crazy. Yeah. What can like people do to like support your organization? Because it feels like maybe people are listening to this and we're getting all riled up and they're like, there must be something we can do. Is there anything we can do?
There's a couple things you can do. You can follow us on social media, which is the_UCAN_foundation, or just search that. That's going to be much easier. Right. You can also go to our website, which is ucanfoundation.org. We are a 501c3, which means any donations you can make are appreciated, and they also are tax exempt. But you can also go to moveon.org/reality, sign our petition that says, let's put a disclaimer on the front of every single episode, reminding people that these are for entertainment purposes only, and that stories can be edited out of order, people can be misrepresented, and you know, basically treat them as human beings, right? And then I encourage you to continue enjoying reality TV. Take a step back if you feel upset at someone or about someone. And this would probably, I hope you agree with this, but you know, you're in the profession. But if you find yourself triggered or upset about something someone did on a TV show, whether it's real, fake, somewhere in between, ask yourself inside, why do I feel the need to say something to someone on the internet that I don't even know? Yes. And go down that journey. And then when you figure that out, ask yourself, well, why do I feel this way? And take what you want to, you know, spit out into the world and internalize it and figure out why you want to do that. And remember what we learned in kindergarten or some of us in preschool: if you can't say anything nice, don't say anything at all. Right?
Right. Yeah.
And
I agree. there's a real like growth opportunity in getting in touch with why do I feel uncomfortable? Why do I feel compelled to yell at somebody? Like, what's going on inside of me? But if you don't pay attention to that and you just like yell into the void or onto the internet or at that person's comment section, then you've missed the opportunity to like become a better person. I agree.
That's so well said. You know, it's, there's a cast member of Married at First Sight in Australia named Alyssa Barmundi. She shared a screenshot of someone who had been DMing her like mean things for a while. And she finally responded to the person. And the person was like, I am so sorry. I didn't think these were ever seen. I was like, spitting them into the void. And I wonder how many people are just, you know, letting out their trauma and not thinking that it's impacting anyone.
Yeah, exactly.
Which kind of makes me sad. And then I have empathy for those people. And it's like,
well, if you ever wanted to start a wing off of like the UCAN like community with like content creators, and how like I was just at South by Southwest a couple weeks ago, and there's a lot of talk about content creators like trying to unionize so that we can have some power with like TikTok and Instagram and Meta and everything. Like, they're kind of like, all these big platforms are getting so much benefit off of us and discarding us. It's a whole thing.
Shadow banned.
Oh yeah. And the shadow banning that goes on, we can't contact anyone that's there. And just the mental health toll of like being on there and posting and dealing, like, we're not supposed to be like getting this much fucking feedback. It really fucks with you. So,
I know you've had a couple tough goes, which you've just seemed to taken stride, but I'm sure it's still impactful.
Yeah, it might look like that, but this is like, I've talked about this a little, or like, the since becoming therapy Jeff, I haven't had to like manage my mental health as much as I have had to. So like, now I'm trying to come up with an exit plan or some way to like really make it so that I'm not posting as much on like Instagram or TikTok.
You post every day at least once.
I do. What the fuck is wrong with me? There's also like big content creators, like just a few days ago, Elise Myers. Do you know who Elise Myers is?
The name rings a bell.
She has like 7 million people, followers on TikTok, 4 million on Instagram. And she was like, fuck this. And she just ghosted. She's gone now. She may or may not come back. There's another one, Jen Hamilton. Just, no, I don't want to fucking do this anymore. So like, now these like big content creators are sort of like dropping out. Mm-hmm. I don't know. This is a whole other discussion that we don't have time for right now, but I'm interested to talk to you more offline about this.
Absolutely.
Sort of thing. Yeah,
absolutely.
Can you tell people where they can find you and what your talk about your podcast?
Yeah, absolutely. So I'll start with the podcast. My podcast is called Eyes Wide Open with Nick Thompson. You can get it anywhere on you listen to your podcast. I also have the video version on YouTube, which for some reason I'm shadow banned there too. So
Jesus.
It's so crazy the power these people have. But we focus on removing stigmas from different topics, including mental health, holistic wellness, culture, free speech, pretty much anything that's in my stream of thought at the time that I reach out to a guest. So check me out there. You can also find me on Instagram, nthompson513. You can also find us at youcanfoundation.org. And then I would say moveon.org/reality if you want to sign our petition.
Right. So Nick has talked about, you've talked about a lot of like places to go, links to go. We're going to link all of these in the show notes so that people can click on it easily and follow you and support you. I really appreciate everything that you talked about here. I feel like it's really important. Thanks so much for coming on my podcast.
Thanks for having me. This is, I appreciate it. I was excited.